today to share this service with Terry. We take so much for granted. Everyday reality we take for granted. Well, of course we do, and why shouldn't we? There are plenty enough important things going on in our lives to capture our attention and our precious time. It's not every morning we wake up first thing and start wondering why everything exists. Remember that last conversation you had with a four-year-old? Why? Why is such a great question. Asking why something is the way it is the mark of a four-year-old's inquiring mind and the mark of a scientist. Today we're going to delve into the world of the scientist and some big why, when, what, and how questions. Why do we have shape? What is matter? Why don't we all just blast off into infinite particles? When did the universe first begin to have a shape? Why did matter even form? And how can we know all of this? Now, I don't think the average person like myself sat down to breakfast this morning, especially on Mother's Day, and began thinking about what holds us all together. Well, actually, as a mother, I sometimes think I do hold everything together. But that's not what we're talking about today. Physicists, on the other hand, think about the great mother of all of us, that which gave birth to the whole physical universe. In the 1960s, a physicist named Peter Higgs went for a walk on the Scottish moors near his home. I want you to imagine a gray day in Scotland, not dissimilar from the weather here most of the time. Cloudy with a light drizzle. And I want you to imagine that you can hear him thinking out loud as he walked along the moors.
Nothing, nothing, nothing. There would be nothing at all. Emptiness, shapelessness. The physical universe as we know it would not be. There would be no solid earth beneath my feet, no blade of grass, no heather, no peat bog. I would have no body. If the standard model is to be relied on, then there must be something that holds everything together. What could it be? There has to be a particle, a something, a glue, that holds all the other particles together.
What he had imagined and had yet to prove was the missing puzzle piece in a theory about why the most basic building blocks of the universe have mass.
Unless a way can be found to confer mass upon particles, nothing's going to stick together. And the standard model would predict that we're never even going to get atoms, let alone Unitarians.
The standard model of particle physics, which you see now on your screen, explains three of the four forces seen in our universe very, very well. It also predicts all the particles ever seen.
But before the Higgs boson was found, the standard model had a big problem. Namely, that none of the particles required mass. And if you don't have mass, you don't stick to other particles and form matter.
So imagine being at a cocktail party. At the start of the party, everyone is kind of spread out all around the room until the Higgs particle shows up. And then everyone gloms on to Higgs and the party really gets going.
The Higgs particle tells us something very basic and fundamental about why we're here. It is evidence of the Higgs field, an invisible force field that stretches across the entire universe, encasing us like a molasses and giving mass to elementary particles within it.
And all that stuff makes up the stars, the planets, the trees, the buildings and animals and all of us.
Without mass, electrons, protons, and neutrons wouldn't stick together to make atoms. Atoms wouldn't make molecules, and none of this would exist.
To find the Higgs particle that holds all matter together, the scientists needed to create conditions as close to the conditions that existed shortly after the original Big Bang moment. So they imagined how they could recreate the origin of the universe.
But actually, there was nothing for the first 380,000 years. The universe was too hot for matter.
Then, out of this great nothingness, something began to take shape.
Exactly. Particles began to take shape. But how was the question? The particle we needed to find was elusive. The standard model gave no indication what mass might be. My colleagues had to look at a wide range of possibilities. Beyond that, catching one was next to impossible because the particle decays almost immediately into other types of particles.
To find the particle or the boson they suspected was there but couldn't prove, the scientists needed to create a way to see one.
They knew that they needed to put so much energy into a small space that one of the particles get knocked free, and then we can see its decay.
Didn't a book publisher call the boson the God particle because it's the linchpin to know all that we know?
No, more like the goddamn particle.
Why is that?
Because it's so goddamn difficult and expensive to find.
Like $4 billion.
Yes, and it took 48 years since I came up with the idea of a boson particle.
So to answer questions about our physical existence,
CERN was created, the largest international scientific endeavor ever.
The European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN, operates the largest particle research program in the world. They began building the Large Hadron Collider in 1954 under the border of France and Switzerland. The image that you can see up here is the CERN site above ground.
The CERN Hadron Collider is a 27-kilometer-long tunnel around which two beams of particles fly in opposite directions, and they're approaching the speed of light.
The gigantic accelerator at CERN doesn't create Higgs bosons, but rather puts so much energy into a small space that one of them gets knocked free, and then we can see the decay.
Nicknamed the Big Bang Machine, CERN's current particle accelerator, which became active in 2008, is the largest machine in the world.
And I just want to show you the size. That's a person. Okay. Today, CERN, that organization, is made up of 21 member states, 113 participating countries. There are 4,500 people on its payroll. And of those, 3,000 are PhD scientists. The average age is 26.
And they all speak one language, science.
Even before the Large Hadron Collider smashed its first protons together, some people worried that its scientists were playing God. That creating the Big Bang in a man-made machine could have catastrophic consequences, the kind we could not even imagine. Some thought the Large Hadron Collider would create a new black hole and suck up our entire planet.
Ha! Ridiculous.
But wouldn't you agree that no one knew exactly what would happen when the protons started shooting around the accelerator faster than 11,000 times around a football field in 1 second?
That boson was an elusive prey. You can imagine the complexity of smashing together protons together at such velocity. Steve Myers, the chief engineer at CERN, said, "It was like firing two needles across the Atlantic and hoping they would hit one another."
They revved up the collider to 8 trillion electron volts in March of 2012. And then things started to happen.
We knew they were getting data, but both the Atlas team and the CMS team had to crunch the numbers. It was a very difficult time waiting.
So, of course, they had two different teams, scientifically a control group. They didn't know which each of them was coming up with which numbers. So in July of 2012, people gathered to hear the conclusion of the experiments, these two teams coming together, not knowing what the other team had come up with. The auditorium was full. The halls were full of people waiting all around CERN and around the world at the 600 participating universities and laboratories. The scientists were waiting in bated breath. Here in British Columbia, the 4 contributing laboratories, University of Victoria, Simon Fraser, UBC, and Triumph, they were all standing by at 2 o'clock in the morning to learn the answer of whether or not the standard model of the universe was the elegant, beautiful model of the structure of matter that they hoped it would be, or if they were all wrong, as one famous physicist, Stephen Hawking, was betting on.
It wasn't just my work. There were 6 other physicists who, between 1964 and 1970, independently arrived at the same theory. François Englert was one of them. He had come up with the same theory the very same year I had. We had never met till that day. 48 years of not knowing. The most magnificent scientific experiment in the history of humankind hung in the balance.
On that July morning, the CERN scientists announced the discovery of a new subatomic particle that was possibly the elusive Higgs boson particle, believed to be the essential formation of the universe.
Yeah, possibly. This was not scientifically conclusive. We had to wait another 8 months for the two teams of detectors, Atlas and CMS, to separately analyze their measurements.
When they did, in March of 2013, CERN announced that the measurements performed on the newly found particle allowed it to conclude that the Higgs boson, in fact, did exist.
You know, I'm not comfortable with emotional displays, but I can't deny that a tear of relief escaped my eye when I heard the scientific conclusion.
Later, in 2013, Peter Higgs and François Englert were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for Physics.
There is so much to know. Beyond searching for the Higgs boson, which has been its most prominent mission, the Large Hadron Collider was conceived to answer some of the most pressing questions in particle physics.
The same day the Higgs finding was revealed, another remarkable discovery was announced to much less fanfare. A team of researchers managed to detect a filament of dark matter bridging 2 clusters of galaxies, the first time such a thing had been done.
Dark matter is a mysterious substance about which almost nothing is known. Its gravitational pull seems to hold galaxies together like a massive skeleton. But we can't see dark matter. We only know it's there from calculations of the speed at which galaxies move.
But now that the missing piece of that elegant standard model is in place, scientists will be able to build new theories and new models of physical reality that might help explain that other, as yet invisible, 96% of the mass of the universe of which we know almost nothing.
There are still so many questions to ask. We've only just begun.
At this moment in human evolution, the scientist and the theologian are asking similar kinds of questions. What is the nature of reality? How did we get here? What are we? Where are we going? Our mothers created our bodies in the womb of their body. How or what created the body of the universe? That is both the scientific question and the spiritual question. Many scientists have been quoted as saying that the more they have studied the nature of the universe, the greater became their appreciation that all creation was the result of beauty. Beauty with a capital B. I find this very satisfying. The Sufi Kabir Hamlinsky defines beauty as anything that becomes our point of contact with love. We live in a beautiful world, a beautiful universe. Beauty begets love, as love begets beauty. And I stand in awe of our human potential and capabilities. Look what we've been able to achieve by using our creative, imaginal, and intellectual abilities. I'm humbled by the achievements of my fellow human beings who believed in that scientific theory and the human capability and created that huge accelerator and the largest scientific project in our history. I also stand in humble and reverential awe of the vast unknown and the impregnable, unknowable mystery of it all. Chet Ramo, the science writer, describes mystery as a shoreline. And we human beings are walking down this beautiful shoreline with one foot on the solid beach of all that we know, and the other foot is immersed in that vast ocean of the unknown, that great mystery. And we walk this beach every day along this shoreline of all that we know and all that we do not know. And as we walk through our day today, may we each be aware of both the awesome capabilities of the human heart and human mind, and the awesomeness of the giganticness of all that we do not know. And may we never, ever stop asking those questions, why,
what,
what,
and how.